The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
You're listening to your mommy on 92.5. You're listening to my mommy on
Nicole Sandler
on the radio.
Boy, Florida, the deadbeat paradise, only good for a quick visit or to die. Rotting mangrove swamps, inhale all you want and pass out from just one whiff. Old and cranky Jews, angry Cubans who welcome you with a shaking fist. So hot you stink and smell. I'm off to the great white north to laugh as I watch you die. To Canada, where the air is cool and the soda is dry.
Ah, Boca Brittany Summers, everyone, with her ode to Florida. Welcome to a new week, everyone. Oh boy, what a week it's going to be. Well, tomorrow, the reason Florida is front and center today, and hopefully after today, we can shut up about Florida for a while. But finally, tomorrow is primary day here in Florida and also in New York. Now, New York was supposed to be much earlier. And what happened was, and I think this all goes back to Andrew Cuomo, actually, who really screwed over the Democrats. Because the Democrats, well, and I think the Democrats are complicit too in New York. What happened was they tried to pull the same crap that the Republicans are pulling all over the country with the gerrymandering. And a judge said, hold on, kids. Yeah, what the other side is doing is wrong, and two wrongs don't make a right. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. And they basically slapped the Democrats down. And what wound up being their redistricting cost New York, I think, three Democratic districts, to the point where now there's a couple of really contentious races pitting incumbent against incumbent. Let me see. I do have notes here. Let me see what I can do before we get into Florida. Let me get through New York. Okay, the biggie is in the 12th district. Well, one of the biggies, because you got Carolyn Maloney, who is the chair of the Oversight and Reform Committee, and Jerry Nadler, who's the House Judiciary Committee chair. They've both been in the House for a long, long, long time. And now this race pits them against each other. So it's not only two of them. There's a third candidate who might be a spoiler. He's an attorney named Suraj Patel. And this all happened after a state judge approved a new map in May. New York loses the seat due to redistricting, forcing Nadler and Maloney to figure out where to run. Now, you know, I made a mistake a while ago, and I was trying to rack my brains. It was after another shooting, or after the gun law, the gun decision by the Supreme Court, whatever it was. And I said, Carolyn Maloney got into Congress because her husband was murdered on the New York City subway by Bernie Goetz. Okay, well, I conflated a few names. It wasn't Carolyn Maloney. It was a different former congresswoman named Carolyn. Hold on. I pulled this up the other day. What congresswoman, New York, husband shot on subway? And I bet this will bring it up. Her name was Carolyn McCarthy. See why I got confused? And she was, she served, was it nine, either nine terms or 9 years in Congress. So, yeah, Carolyn McCarthy, after nine terms. So, wow, this is going back a long. I think this happened when I lived in New York, and I was in New York 1981 to 87 or something like that. Let's see. Oh, well, I was wrong. It was the Long Island Railroad. How my memory doesn't cooperate very well. And you go away. All right, something is up here. The death of her husband, one of the victims in the Long Island Railroad gun massacre of 1993. So I wasn't even there at the time. So that's why my memory is so cloudy. Anyway, I'm just correcting myself. I was wrong. And I hate getting stuff wrong. So when I get something wrong and I remember, I correct myself. So Carolyn Maloney is a different Carolyn who's been in Congress for a long time, as has Gerald Nadler. One of them is going to be out. Now, this guy Patel, the third candidate in this primary race, he lost two primaries to Maloney already. He said it's time for a generational change. It's 2022, time to turn the page on 1992. Ooh, burn. Let's see. Nadler entered Congress in 1992. Maloney followed 2 months later. So they've both been there for 30 years. All right. So there's that race, right? That's a biggie. Then there's New York's 10th district. This is the one that the former mayor, de Blasio, was running in until he realized that nobody likes him and he finally dropped out. But not only was de Blasio running there, Mondaire Jones, who is another progressive, one of the progressives, kind of an ancillary member of the squad, if you will, he had to find another district to run in because, again, his district was redistricted. So for some reason, he chose to go into New York's 10th. It's in Manhattan. I don't think he's doing great there. So in this race, now de Blasio's gone, but Elizabeth Holtzman is also in that race. Elizabeth Holtzman, former Brooklyn DA and former congresswoman who was famously on the impeachment committee for Richard Nixon. She was there back in Nixon days. Elizabeth Holtzman, I'm such a fan of hers. I really like her. I wish she hadn't jumped into this race because she doesn't stand a shot. And I think it would have been better for her to leave her her legacy intact. But oh, nobody asked me. So also in the 10th district is Dan Goldman. Now, Dan Goldman, if you watch MSNBC, you've seen him over the years. He's a young, kind of good-looking attorney. He was one of the impeachment lawyers in the first impeachment of Donald Trump. And he's also, he's a trust fund baby. He's independently wealthy. He's self-funding his race. He is a, I think he's an heir to the New York Times Sulzberger family. So, a lot, and the New York Times endorsed him, endorsed Gerald Nadler, and endorsed, I think, Sean Patrick Maloney, like three white men in three important races, and they're under a lot of fire for that. So you got Dan Goldman, you got Mondaire Jones, you got Elizabeth Holtzman. You also have New York City Council member Carlina Rivera, New York Assembly member Joanne Simon, and New York State Assembly member Uline Naiu, who I hear is the real progressive. And, you know, she's giving, it looks like it's split maybe between Dan Goldman and Mondaire Jones, but Uline Naiu, N-I-O-U, apparently is also a contender there. But he, oh, it's not the Sulzberger fortune. I was wrong. It's the Levi Strauss fortune. I get my fam. See, I worked. I always have a story, don't I? I worked for a while. When I first moved up to New York after college, I worked at WMCA, a talk station, owned by the Strauss family. R. Peter Strauss and his wife was Ellen Sulzberger Strauss. Follow me here. Yes, Ellen Sulzberger Strauss from the New York Times family. Our Peter Strauss, I wanted to say, was the Levi Strauss family, but I'm not, don't quote me on that, I'm not sure. Anyway, Goldman is an heir to the Levi Strauss fortune. He put $4 million of his own money into the race, outspending everybody. He was endorsed by the New York Times. His opponents accused him of trying to buy the seat. But apparently, heading into tomorrow's election, he's leading the field. So that's the second. There's the 10th district. That's the 10th. The district that Maloney and Nadler are running in. I don't know. I want to say it's the 12th. It's the 12th. The 12th district. And the third biggie is the 17th. And that is where Sean Patrick Maloney, the chair of the DCCC, is running. Again, he decided to run in that district. He's up against New York State Senator Alessandra Biaggi, who is the progressive darling. Sean Patrick Maloney is anything but progressive. He's the one who the buck stops with him on the DCCC's practice of pushing, of promoting the most extreme right wing candidates to win in Republican primaries, thinking they would be easier to beat in the general. So if we wind up with the idiot, the Nazi guy in Pennsylvania, you'll know why. Anyway, that's the 17th district. AOC and progressive groups are backing Alessandra Biaggi, while Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic Party elders, if you will, meant in every sense of the word, are backing Sean Patrick Maloney. So there are also two special elections. New York is big, so there's a lot going on. So there's the New York stuff. And in just moments, we're going to deal with the Florida stuff with today's guest. Now, today's guest is somebody that I came to know of. I knew he was there, but I never really had any connection with him. This guy named Peter Schorsch. I would have been pronouncing it wrong. Peter Schorsch is the publisher and executive editor of a Florida political website called FloridaPolitics.com, which makes sense, right? And what happened was, he's the guy who broke the story of the search warrant being executed at Mar-a-Lago now 2 weeks ago today. But he knew that this was not his thing. Wasn't enough of a digging deep reporter. But he tweeted out that he heard that the Mar-a-Lago was currently under a FBI search warrant. And then the major news organizations came in and picked up from there. Anyway, Peter Schorsch, again, at FloridaPolitics.com, is doing a really great job of rounding up everything that's happening in this Florida race. And there's so much. Florida's such a big state that I thought, let me get Peter on the phone or on the show, and let's see what we can learn from him. So, are you ready? You know, there's a song by a singer that I love named Patty Griffin. She's just great. This song was never a hit, and I'd play it if I could, but, you know, copyright violations and all that. But it's called Please Don't Let Me Die in Florida. It's a great song, and I second the sentiments, and you'll understand exactly why that's a thing. When we listen to this interview, we recorded it about 2 hours ago. So let's get into the swamp, shall we? Different kind of swamp. We got the Everglades. A lot of swampy land here in Florida. So take it away, Peter Schorsch, and me. Everything you always wanted to know about Florida and much, much more. Here we go. Peter Schorsch is our guest, and thank you so much for being here today. I'm in southeast. Once again, I'm having problems. This is not supposed to happen. I don't know why there's the double the double audio there. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to play it a different way for you. Just because, yeah, that's not going to work. So let's do it this way.
Peter Schorsch is our guest. And thank you so much for being here today. I'm in southeast Florida. You're in what? Central West Florida. Although you're in the Tampa Bay area, right?
I am in St. Petersburg. We're our own little world over here. We're like a little peninsula on a peninsula.
Yes. I went to school at USF. So I was there, but many, many years ago before they had a football team even. So I'm very old school. So Peter Schorsch is the publisher and executive editor of a website, floridapolitics.com, and a few affiliated, I guess, companies that sort of go hand in hand. Now, so Peter, your website does a really good job of covering what's happening in the state. And the state of Florida has a lot of different political stories or areas. We're a lot of places strung together in a peninsula. Is that a good way to describe Florida?
Yeah, in fact, it's almost overwhelming. You just look at the amount of stories that happen, you know, within 24 hours. We have two political candidates, people on the ballot, who have threatened to kill FBI agents as part of their campaign platform within the last day or so. Like, that would normally be enough. We would investigate these people. We would write think pieces about how violence is on the campaign trail. We can barely keep up with just that single story angle about a state house candidate and a congressional candidate, neither of whom will win, but made it part of their platform to threaten federal agents. And so that's the kind of the craziness that happens in Florida politics almost every day.
It is. And it's been ongoing. This is nothing new for Florida. Here in South Florida, when my entree into Florida politics came in around 2005 or so, 2004, I think, when I started working at WINZ in Miami, which was at the time, I guess it was 2005, an Air America radio affiliate. It was a progressive talk station when those things still existed, especially here in Florida. And a few years later, Clear Channel decided, you know, that South Florida needed a fourth sports talk station instead of a station that covered politics from a progressive or democratic viewpoint. But that's a story for another day. So when I first got involved, there were some characters who, you know, who made news. And I guess some of them are still in the news. We'll get to that in a moment. But I worked with Jim DeFede, who is also one of the best political reporters, not only in Florida, but I think in the country. And and he's still doing the thing. But Jim used to talk about Florida politics like no other. Like, this is a place on its own island, as it were. So, and Miami politics is even weirder than the rest of the state. Although
I almost think it's like being in a foreign bureau, like the way that, you know, like if you think back to like the first part of last century, it would be glamorous to be posted to the London bureau. Like if you were the New York Times's man in London, that was a big deal, or in Paris, and you would write back dispatches from wars and things like that. And I almost feel like being a Florida man or woman reporter is maybe not as glamorous as days of old, but it is certainly like a foreign bureau where people, you know, have a lot of interest in it. DC, New York, the rest of the country has a lot of interest in it. They're constantly making references to it. It's good, you know, it's good content. It's good for the money side of it. I mean, these stories, you know, propel the news, Trump, DeSantis, close elections, et cetera. And so that's how I've kind of come to see it, is that we are working in not in another state, but literally like in just in a completely different world than the rest of the country, the New York, DC media environment.
You know, and Florida is such a big state geographically, and it's shaped weirdly. So what happens down here in Miami is literally worlds away from what's going on in the Panhandle in Pensacola or Tallahassee, the capital, where, you know, I've lived in Florida for most of my life. Actually, family moved here from New York a long, long time ago. And I went to school all through college. And then I moved back. I moved out to L.A. for a while. But I've never been. And then I came back 15, 20 years ago. I have never been to Pensacola. I've never been to Tallahassee. I've never been to Jacksonville except to drive through it because it's such a big state. And again, it could be really a different world. And politically, in some cases, it is. So let's talk about tomorrow is our primary day. Finally, it's arrived. And there's so many races going on. Of course, the big one is the gubernatorial primary. Nobody's challenging DeSantis on the right, which I think is a shame. But on the left, we've got, well, there are four candidates on my ballot, but only two that we are really looking at, Charlie Crist and Nikki Fried. Not exactly the A-team to go up against a very polarizing but for inexplicably popular governor in DeSantis, are they?
I don't know if I would say they're not the A-team. I'm a big Chris supporter, or at least in this primary I am. And I think that they're both strong candidates in terms of like fundraising and message and media understanding. Both of them are both very media savvy candidates. I think probably what's troubling maybe to you, but also to other progressives and Democrats is, you know, you only have to go back a dozen years or so, and both of these people were actively working for Republican causes. One as an elected official in Crist, and one as essentially a Republican lobbyist in Nikki Fried. Both of them supported and worked for some of the people who are in the Republican legislature or Republican administration now. You know, Nikki Fried, you know, gets dinged again and again. The last campaign she kind of campaigned for was Manny Diaz, who is a far right state senator and is now education commissioner. And obviously, Crist has gone from Republican, you know, was known as Chain Gang Charlie in the beginning of the 90s for being so anti-crime and for literally proposing legislation, bringing back chain gangs on the side of the road.
Oh, that's right. Now, Chain Gang Charlie, he was called for a while there.
Well, Art Dykman of the then St. Petersburg Times coined him as that. You know, and he, you know, he basically, you know, evolved from that. Some people, you know, I look at it, I really do believe this is, and this isn't a homer for Charlie. I do feel like Charlie was always there kind of personality wise. He was very open on a bunch of issues, especially the environment, especially on, I would say, like racial issues. And the party just simply moved away from him 2010, 2011, and became, you know, ultra MAGA or whatever it is today. That's just almost unrecognizable to most establishment Republicans.
Well, right. And we watched Charlie, his metamorphosis from Republican to now Democrat. And it happened out of necessity. Look, Charlie Crist has always been a political opportunist, and I voted for him. So, you know, I'm honest with my listeners. They know where I stand. I'm not a journalist. I'm a talk show host, and I have opinions. I like Nikki Fried as a person, I think, but, I just didn't think she could win. And I don't think she comes across as credible enough. And then I see this item today that what she did this weekend, she had an event in Pompano Beach at the Worldwide Christian Center with the Reverend O'Neill Dozier. Now, that's a name I had not heard in a dozen or so years, but I remember back when I was working with Defeating, and he was this crazy right-wing pastor who railed against same-sex adoption and just so many things. He railed against a mosque or an Islamic center being built in Broward County, just so Islamophobic and racist and bigoted. And he's a black man, but he still can be a racist. He was horrible in every respect. And now she's doing an event with him. I guess he's rebuked Trump, but still, that's not good enough, is it?
You know, we all have choices, and I don't want to say that that this person could not have reformed their world or whatever. But when I read that, I mean, how many locations are there in South Florida where you can campaign for? There are literally hundreds. And she did choose this one. And yeah. I am, you know, they're going to write, I think, the obituary about her campaign. And you will see a lot of unforced errors. We got to remember that this was a statewide elected Democrat who decided to sue the Democratic president of the United States. That was one of the choices that she made, you know, during the campaign. She just made error after tactical error. I don't want to delve into too deeply into right. Nikki's personal life, but no. I will say she has gone through from being engaged to a married man to out of that relationship that played out in the background. And I think, quite honestly, part of that is why she's polling so poorly with women. Part of the argument for Nikki's candidacy is in a post-Dobbs decision world, we need someone that's going to fight for pro-choice candidates and issues, and that Nikki is that person. And yet, if we look at the polling that came out today, it's not men, it's not Black voters where Crist has the largest advantage over. It's amongst women voters. Mm. And so I think there's some sort of disconnect there. I think that a lot of women voters got that early impression. They didn't understand some parts of like Freed's personal life. I think that there's a lot of suburban moms who are uncomfortable voting for somebody that is that pro medical marijuana industry, that's involved in the medical marijuana. I think people are fine with.
That's the one thing I liked about her is her pro pot stance. But
I get the issue that yeah. you like the issue, but I don't think that that's. I think that the moderate, you know, the cliched suburban female vote was not ready to give their support to just a candidate with that kind of personal baggage and who's, God, it's so tough, but it's like has a medical marijuana license because she suffers so much from anxiety, et cetera. I just think that yeah, there was a lot of personal flaws that I don't know that she ever made the right first impression with a lot of voters.
No,
judge her personally.
I think you're right. And the thing is, we have a history with Charlie Crist. And even when he was the Democrat, he was the Republican governor of Florida. This is when I worked with Jim DeFede at WINZ. DeFede used to call him the best Democratic governor that Florida's had in so many years. Obviously, it was saying that Charlie was not like a right-wing Republican. He actually did a lot of good things, and we covered this. I had both of them on the show in recent months, and we talked about it. Charlie, you know, he extended early voting hours. As a Republican, you know, did things that the typical party Republican didn't do. And basically he became a Democrat out of necessity because he decided to run for the Senate. He got killed by Marco Rubio in the primary. He changed his status to independent. And then later on, he became a Democrat and the rest, as they say, is history. But we also talked about the Obama rally. I was there at MacArthur High School when they hugged and it was like the hug heard round the world. And so so that's that race. I'm pretty sure Charlie Crist will easily win the primary tomorrow night. But the question is, can he do anything against DeSantis? Now, can you explain why DeSantis is so popular, knowing who he is and what he's done?
I can. And I think part of the reason why our organization may be more credible than some of the other organizations is that we probably, you know, for every two licks we put on DeSantis, we probably give him one attaboy. And I will say, you know, that if you look at, just start with the economy, which is always your number one measure. And we're at less than 3% unemployment in Florida. Now there's a lot of variables that go into that. You can thank Joe Biden for a lot of that. You can thank all those federal dollars
That's
pouring
right.
into Florida. But you know, if we're going to give Biden for credit on the economy or the rallying economy, you're going to have to give DeSantis some of that credit, especially when you compare it to some of the other large states right now, like Illinois, like California. Florida does have an attractive record versus, you know, I love New York more than anybody. And, you know, New York City is still struggling. It is still almost like a post-war city coming out of the pandemic. I've been up there like four times, and that's what keeps striking me. So that would be number one. I think number two that really DeSantis got off to a great first 6 months. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the opposite of Rick Scott, who had a terrible first six months, but then was not as bad in the rest of his first term. I think
depends
that
who you ask. But okay.
Think about the memory that a lot of people, the first impression they have of DeSantis in office, literally standing there with John Morgan talking about medical marijuana, talking about environmental issues, et cetera. I think he got off to a relatively good start. Now, that has now cratered. Now, DeSantis has gone from a 2-1 governor, you know, favorability of 2-1, to really a 50-50 governor. And he is polarizing. And if you're polarizing, I think that does make you somewhat vulnerable. So I don't think that this race is the slam dunk. I think there's a shifting mood in the country right now. I think the indicators for the Democrats at the national level have been running much better over the last 5 to 6 weeks. If they can somehow not get in their way, as they are so often prone to do, you know, I think some of the money will start shifting back into Florida. Here's the best advantage for Charlie Crist going into November. Val Demings. I mean, Val Demings has all the money in the world right now, is got a lot of momentum, is going to be able to turn out. Charlie Crist or Nikki Fried are going to be able to count on Val Demings to turn out the black vote at 90-95% and not have to worry about that as much as they would have to worry about it in other cases. They can focus on other issues. You know, she's going to have, I don't know, she will have 20, 30, 40 million in television ads criticizing Republicans in the state. You know, I think that that may be kind of the silver lining for the Democrats. In fact, I still think DeSantis wins, but I think it could be a split ticket where DeSantis wins and Demings maybe slips by somewhere like 10, 20, 30,000 votes.
Well, I hope so. And the thing is, Demings is running a good campaign. I've seen her on TV and she's smart. They're running these 10, 15 second little spots that just come in and go, but there's a frequency. There are a lot of them, to the point where DeSantis went up finally with ads that are just horrific, talking about freedom, a very Orwellian in tone. He's not running in the primary. He's looking at the general, but I guess he's trying to get that, the subliminal stuff, freedom, what he's
the
proposing.
Free state of Florida.
Yeah, free state of Florida. Oh my God. But Demings, so Marco Rubio is in trouble. Today, he put out an email basically saying we're losing in fundraising, we're down in numbers. Marco Rubio has been sort of an absentee senator for a long time. He just doesn't show up. Maybe finally he's going to get his due, I'm hoping, in November.
I think I'm going to come at it from a different angle. And I will say, I think many of the points you make are correct. I think Rubio's real Achilles heel is that he's actually not as strong with the Republican base as he should be. Like, if DeSantis gets past Crist Fried, which he should, if he does, it'll be like 53-47. Mm-hmm. If Rubio does, I think it will be by the slightest of margins, because I think he only picks up about 80-90% of the GOP support that DeSantis does. I think there are a lot of people that support DeSantis, free state of Florida, believe that he's all in. I think there are a lot of Republicans that see Rubio. They don't like his record. They don't like him because of the Gang of Eight immigration stuff that he tried a few years ago. They also don't
like him because he's dishonest. When he ran for president in 2016, he said, this is it. If I don't win, I'm private citizen Rubio after this. That's just bullshit. Of course he was going to run, and he did. You can't take him at his word for anything. I have other reasons not to like Rubio, but he hasn't been straight with the people of Florida.
And I would just say, I just don't think that he has the deepest of roots with other parts. The problem, though, again, for Demings, Rubio, is, I'll say this, Miami-Dade is just is such a different world right now in terms of, like, its radicalization towards the right. And I don't know if Demings can overcome obviously Democrats are going to win there, but she has to win it by such a margin to overcome Rubio's strength in other areas. And it's like a Lucy and Charlie Brown, the moving the football.
Yep.
Democrats keep depending on South Florida to turn out to win these elections. and it ends up not happening. You know, we wait for Broward to come in, and they're like, ah, Broward underperformed again.
Again.
It's not, you know, you look at it, it's not Duval where Democrats have really made inroads. I think they won the last time around. It's not Tampa Bay. Hillsborough has gone, you know, firmly to the blue category. It used to be a bellwether. It is South Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you look at Miami, and there's been a complete turnaround in Miami-Dade, which I think Spanish language radio had a lot to do with it, because the Florida Democratic Party really needs, when you were talking about Manny Diaz, see, we have two Manny Diazes in Florida.
Yes.
And one of them is the president of the Florida Democratic Party, and he may as well be a Republican. When he became chair of the Florida Democratic Party is when I said, I'm not going to be a committee precinct person anymore, just because I've got real deep philosophical differences with him and the way that they operate. So the party is ineffective. The Broward County Democratic Party is ineffective. We have big problems statewide, and it shows in the way that this country, this state has elected people in the past decade or so. But we have, so you mentioned Marco Russo, Miami-Dade, though, we had a problem with, I don't think they were monitoring the Spanish language right-wing talk media, and they were lying to people and ratcheting up fear, socialism, and all that stuff. And now the Proud Boys actually control the Miami-Dade Democratic Executive Committee.
Republican.
Democrats on the mind. The Republican Party.
You know, it's, I look at this weekend where Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez got into a kerfuffle because she talked about busing Cuban immigrants, whether they, she said illegal immigrants. That's the issue that's in dispute right now. But one way or the other, she talked about taking Cuban undocumented immigrants and busing them to Delaware as a shot at President Biden's immigration policy.
Mm-hmm.
She is the daughter of you know, the Cuban diaspora at this point. For her to not be figuring out and not to say, hey, listen, these people that are fleeing from Cuba on rafts should somehow, you know, we should maybe go back to Dryfoot. The fact that she would do that, and that's why she, like Mark Caputo, who's been following that area for years, was just amazed that she would say something like that. Now, they have tried to back off of that comment, try to explain it away, but still, there is this this radicalization on immigration policies, on, again, you know, this kind of on defund the police issues. Like you said, it has to do a lot with the misinformation, the disinformation coming off of Spanish radio stations. I will say, that's probably where I feel like I know the least about Florida politics, is looking over here from St. Petersburg at what's going on in South Florida, where it just seems like almost like Beirut in terms of one ethnic group going against another. On these politics, they're so fierce. I almost think that they're going to become violent, like physically violent at some point. The level of animosity going on these politics, and you see it. You see the, like when they were doing the truck rallies and so forth. They would, you know, there would be some very heated arguments where all it would take is, you know, one wrong turn by one car of one rally, and you just could have something just get out of hand. Like I said, go back to the top of this pod where, you know, people are threatening federal agents. You know, it's bonkers what's going on the right side.
It really is. And you know what? Look, I'm in Broward County, and Miami-Dade to me is another country. We don't go down there unless there's a specific event that we're going to. Otherwise, I can't tell you what's happening in Miami-Dade politics, but that's the problem with Florida politics. And there's so much. An hour wouldn't be enough to get through this. We're going to hit on a couple of the highlights. Peter Schorsch is with us. He is the publisher and executive editor of FloridaPolitics.com. We've got a bunch of competitive and tough congressional race is coming up too. There's a few. I'm in the 23rd district. It was the 22nd. It's now the 23rd. My congressman for the last 10 years has been Ted Deutsch. He's leaving. We have a field of six, with one guy who is the avowed front runner, Jared Moskowitz. He was the first to get in. He's the best name recognition. And it's almost like he's the heir apparent. He's the one who's been designated to take over. I have a problem with that. And I also, I've been on the air here in South Florida for a long, long time. Not on the air anymore, on the internet, but still. I reached out to every one of those six. Five of them got back to me and came on the show and were happy to engage with me. I didn't even merit a response from Jared Moskowitz's campaign, which shows me that he just figures he doesn't need my vote. He doesn't need my listeners' votes. I just don't like that. But he's pretty much a shoo-in, do you think?
He's at, and Jared and I are close, and we had a podcast together before he became a candidate. So you're not going to get anything probably out of me other than to say, you know, there is a little feel of designation to Jared, coronation, I think is even probably a more appropriate word. I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. I will say, you know, there's a long history of family service there. I thought Jared was a dedicated public servant when he was at Department of Emergency Management. I think the Democrats need more people, more stars like Jared in there, Florida. Like, I think that that is, you know, I think that that will be an upgrade. I mean, it's obviously only one Democrat replacing another Democrat, but I think that that will be an upgrade. I think it will become he will become a national player.
Oh, not for me, because I see this as a sign of real disrespect. Not that I'm any great shakes or anything, but a note, a quick response to a text or a direct message saying, I'm sorry, I just don't have time. They ignored me, and I sent at least 24 requests through various channels, all respectful, ignored me. And I'm sorry, I will blast him to the high heavens because I think that sucks.
That's poor form. And I will be sure to mention that to Jared next
time
I talk.
I appreciate it. There's another really contentious primary, a few of them, but one in the 10th district. This was Val Demings' district that she's leaving to run for senator. But there's a number of candidates running, but it's basically a four-way race now. I'll say even a two-way race between Alan Grayson, who we know, who we all have opinions about, and Maxwell Frost, who is a young activist, up and coming, you know, Bernie supporter. I used to be friendly with Alan Grayson. He has a tendency to burn bridges. He's pissed off a lot of people. I'm surprised he's running again.
I think it's a three-way. I think you have to put in Senator Randolph Bracey in that race.
Okay. Tell me about him, because I don't even know him.
He is a thoughtful but kind of he's a thoughtful state senator, good record on criminal justice reform. That district is one of the interesting, you know, they jammed all the Democrats they could into that one. And so it's about 40% white, I think about 37% black. So, you know, I think Frost and Maxwell, and I forget who the other candidate is, or excuse me, Frost and Bracey will be splitting up that black vote. Mm. There could be a window maybe for Grayson to come in. I've seen Grayson spending money the last week or so. So maybe he sees an opening there. I think Frost, though, a super PAC came in and spent several hundred thousands of dollars for Frost. I would not be surprised if he gets through to the general.
Interesting. And on the Republic, this is a blue district.
I don't even remember who the,
it doesn't matter. Right.
Yeah.
It's like Broward. It's like in my district, it's going to be whoever wins this primary, most likely Jared.
Yeah. It's, I think Calvin Wimbosh. It doesn't matter. You know, they carved that seat up so that they could basically flip Stephanie Murphy's Democrat seat into a Republican seat, which it's going to become. And so, I disagreed strongly with the courts. I do think that these are gerrymandered districts.
Well, and to that, we should also not, you know, we need to mention that DeSantis got his way. He wanted to eliminate a district up in northern Florida that was basically a black district. The court said no, but he wound up winning in the end. We lost two blue districts, didn't we?
Yes, we lost basically a Northeast Florida Al Lawson seat.
That's the black district, right?
That was a majority minority district. That has gone away. CD7, which is Stephanie Murphy's, but that had always before that that was held by a Republican, so that had been a battleground one. The real loss is CD13 over my neck of the woods, Charlie Crist's district. Mm. That's probably that is probably going to flip to the Republicans. There's a good Democrat running there. It'll be interesting to see which one of the Republicans gets out of that seat, because if the one that I think might be beatable gets through, it could be a battleground seat.
Wow. I want to ask you about one more race. And because this is another weird one, but we have no shortage of those in Florida. This is Matt Gaetz's seat. Now, Matt Gaetz is under investigation for child sex trafficking. Hello. And yet he just got Trump's endorsement. So he's running again on the Republican side. Why he's still in Congress, I don't know. On the Democratic side, there is a primary. I forget who the one candidate is, but Rebecca Jones, who many of us know her name because she was involved in the statistics, in the data of COVID at the beginning of the pandemic. And she famously went up against DeSantis, and he, of course, retaliated against her. At this point, I don't know what's true and what isn't. He had police break into her home with guns pointed with her kid and her husband there. I mean, it was really ugly. And so, again, can you explain to us what happened with Rebecca Jones and then her candidacy here?
I will say Rebecca Jones just is not credible. Okay. As a person, a data scientist, or whatever. And in fact, here's where Democrats lose is by banking on people like Rebecca Jones, who, you know, has been, and I've followed this as closely as almost anyone. You know, I think she is a grifter. I think that she did set up these accounts. I think she's been, you know, again and again, she's been proven to not, independent whistleblower accounts. I think it's inappropriate to say, you know, or inaccurate to say that DeSantis had the police break into her account. She was breaking into the state's computers using that, you know, to when she was no longer able to have access and the FDLE investigator. What's interesting is she's running for Congress in this seat. As you and I speak a couple of hours ago, she was
reinstated. Right.
Yeah. Restored to the ballot. So it'll be interesting because will some people who have voted early, the few Democrats that exist up in the panhandle, will they have not voted for her? And just to add more color to this interesting race, you know, Mark Lombardo, a veteran, is running against Matt Gaetz. I think the reason why you saw Trump endorse Gaetz over the weekend is because Lombardo had spent several hundred thousand dollars in television ads. One was quite clever. It implied that they thought Matt Gaetz was the person that had flimped on Trump to the FBI. And so it'll be interesting to see. I think Matt Gaetz is going to win, but maybe he only wins 60-40 or something like that tomorrow in the GOP primary.
Wow. And then there's still an investigation into him. And by all accounts, who was his friend in the Florida, the guy who is alleged? Yes. So what's happening with his case?
His sentencing has been delayed again and again because he is supposedly
flipping on Gaetz, right?
And so we're kind of waiting for this. And I have a very weird feeling we're going to reelect Matt Gaetz, or the voters of District 1 are going to reelect Matt Gaetz. And then we're going to get this deal. And then we're going to have this guy stuck in office with some pretty incriminating accusations made against him.
Oh, my God. And yet Al Franken resigns from the Senate because there's a picture taken of him stupidly with his hands looking like they're grabbing someone's breasts when they weren't. And Matt Gaetz, credible charges against him. He may be convicted, but he'll be in Congress.
I mean, wasn't the theme of this podcast today how crazy Florida
politics? Florida, it's getting the duh out of Florida. This here, I've got a little Florida salute song. I won't play the whole thing for you, but I will play if I can. And now it doesn't want to hit. Hold on, here we go. Little quickie.
Boy, Florida.
The whole thing, it goes, the deadbeat's paradise. It goes on and on. Oi, Florida.
I and this isn't to make fun of chiropractors, but I remember after the 2000 recount, the New York Times, I remember reading an article and it said, Florida is the place where people who lose their medical license become chiropractors. And it's just like,
well,
and that, I don't want to make fun of all of our friends in the chiropractic industry. It's like, that does kind of feel how we are.
May I introduce you to Dr. Joseph Latipo?
Oh, yes.
Lapdog, as we call him here. He is the Surgeon General who the people at UCLA, where he allegedly treated the first wave of COVID patients, have no clue who he is. This is who DeSantis brought in as Surgeon General. He doesn't believe in vaccines. This is why some of us are leaving Florida. Peter Schorsch, thank you so much. I know, look, our primaries tomorrow. You are busy. You're running FloridaPolitics.com and doing a great job. Plus, your column, what is it called? Hold on, let me pull it up here, which is like a roundup of everything happening here. Sunburn?
Yes.
How do you do that every day? I mean, today's is particularly lengthy because we're voting tomorrow, but wow.
Let me give a shout out to the nearly 20 reporters that we have working. They've been working on all the stuff that we've been talking about, keeping up with all the coverage, but they've been working on what we call table setters and election previews. You know, we will have written about 80 to 90 previews of various races up and down the ballot throughout Florida. We'll have another 100, 120 stories tomorrow night on election results. And so being the captain of that team, you know, that's really what I owe any success that I have to, is to those folks working and covering races from Nassau school board to congressional races down in South Florida over to Pinellas state house seats.
Yeah.
The folks that do that is really, I think, impressive.
Kudos to all of you guys. You're doing a great job. Oh, I gotta go one more. The 27th district, Annette Tadeo dropped out of the Senate, the governor's race, knowing she wasn't getting anywhere. She has a better shot in Miami. She's been on the show a couple of times, actually. Do you think she has a shot at winning that and bringing at least some Democratic representation back to South Florida?
I think that is going to be the sleeper race of the congressional races in Florida. Almost all of them will be decided in the primary tomorrow. You know, there'll still be races in November, but they won't really be competitive. That one's going to be interesting. It'll depend. Will the National Dems want to put money into South Florida or not?
I hope they do. She'd be great in Congress. I've known Annette for more than a decade, and she's wonderful. She's the real deal. And I was thrilled, actually, when she dropped out to enter this race. So, you know, knocking on wood laminate here. Peter Schorsch, thank you so much. It was great to meet you. I know you're busy. I really appreciate your time and your insight here. Great talking to you.
Thank you.
There you go. Peter Schorsch from FloridaPolitics.com. A conversation we had just a couple hours ago on a busy, busy day. So the early voting's done. Well, early voting's done. It ended this weekend. So if you haven't yet voted in Florida, tomorrow's the day. Go to your polling place, and it's probably a new place. So hopefully you checked all that out and you know where you're going. So let's see. We still got a few minutes left. You know what? I was reading, because that was a taped interview, I was reading along in the chat. I love talking with you guys. But somebody mentioned Al Franken, that Al Franken should run for the Senate again. Yes, he should. But he guest hosted Jimmy Kimmel the other night. I think Al Franken knows, look, he's not going to run against Amy Klobuchar or Tina Smith, who replaced him. So his, you know, there's two jobs in the Senate from Minnesota.
if he doesn't want to move, and that's where he lives, and that's, you know, so obviously he's not. And it looks like he's, you know, he's doing a podcast, and he's doing a tour, which is like a speaking tour, but obviously there's some comedy there. And of course, he guest hosted for Jimmy Kimmel the other night. I meant to go in and really chop it up and bring you more of it than I did, but you know, I get distracted sometimes. It's my adult ADD. Anyway, I did pull this one clip.
But I really think that one of the most serious issues facing our country today is just how big a dick Ted Cruz is.
Now, love it. Just love it.
I've said it before, but I probably like Ted Cruz more than most of my colleagues like Ted Cruz, and I hate Ted Cruz.
What more do you need?
Now, Ted Cruz is probably one of the most famous senators because, as I mentioned, he's a huge dick.
Now, and he went on like that. You know, if he were senator, he couldn't do that, right? He couldn't do that. So there is breaking news. Donald Trump, who just can't stand not being the center of attention for a half a second, has now filed a lawsuit against the FBI. Let me see if I can't pull this up again here. Trump sues, seeking to temporarily block the FBI from reviewing the classified materials seized from his home, asking the court to appoint a, quote, special master in the interim to help them review the evidence collected as they executed a search warrant. This man is delusional. This man is fucking nuts. And our friend Lauren Mayer produced a song for him. Here we go.
Donnie stole secret papers, but we're on to his capers, so he's getting the vapors now. It's a hoax. First he ranted, then claimed powers he'd been granted, then claimed it was all planted. How? You can't play with documents like a Barbie, or write on him with a Sharpie, and don't attack the FBI to explain his heinous crimes and abuses. Each day he introduces all sorts of lame excuses. Why? It's all a lie. He can't blink to declassify stuff, whining, but this is my stuff, doesn't decertify stuff. He's out of luck. Like in some crazy sitcom, of course, Trump adds to the drama by accusing Obama. What a schmuck. As his defenders rip truth asunder, it really makes us wonder how far will they go for this schmo. But I guess they think he's some kind of genie who can just nod his beanie or do some kind of queenie shtick. Or start waving his teeny wand. It's mushroom shoot.
Lauren Mayer, everybody. I dream of declassification is what she calls that one.
If you enjoyed this video or any of my weekly songs, I hope you consider joining my Patreon.
Patreon.com, Lauren Mayer.
What I do, which is helping you laugh at the news that would otherwise make you cry. And check out all the rewards at patreon.com/Lauren Mayer. And thank you so much for your support.
Thank you, Lauren Mayer. She's so funny. And for those of you just listening to one of the audio streams and not seeing the video, she's dressed up in her best Barbara Eden genie costume and dancing. You got to give it to Lauren Mayer because she goes all in. She leaves nothing on the table. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of an hour. It's good to end on a laughing note, right? If you're in Florida or New York and you haven't yet done so, vote. Vote like your life depends on it, because it does. Tomorrow's Tuesday. It's that other Tuesday. Laffy should be here tomorrow. I haven't spoken to her, but I'm just going to figure she's here tomorrow. So We got that. And Howie's supposed to be back on Thursday. So that's a good thing. And hopefully by tomorrow, I'll have an update on my eye surgery. Fun, fun, fun. All right. Go vote. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening. And thanks to the chat room. You guys are great. Okay, as I tend to do, I will leave you with the news because we can, and I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Another day, another video showing police brutality surfaces and spreads like wildfire. This time it was in Arkansas, where three law enforcement officers were suspended after video shared widely online appears to show them beating a 27-year-old man. The three have been suspended. Two separate investigations have already been launched by Arkansas State Police and the Sheriff's Office. Stay tuned. It's still August, and we've got some pretty serious travel advisories in effect. After a weekend of heavy rain in the South, more than 13 million people remain under flood warnings on Monday. Many parts of North and Central Texas are under flood watches, along with some areas of Northwest Louisiana. Forecasters say increased rain is causing excessive runoff that floods rivers, creeks, streams, and other low-lying areas. Forecasts show an additional 4 to 8 inches on top of the up to 6 inches of rain that's already fallen across the Texas-Oklahoma border. Meanwhile, heavy downpours in New Mexico this weekend forced about 160 people to evacuate from Carlsbad Caverns National Park. Rangers also received a report of hikers being swept off their feet due to powerful floodwaters at Utah's Zion National Park a few days ago. Heads up! The pause on the federal student loan payments is set to expire in 9 days on August 31st. Millions of people are unsure about what will happen when that day comes. Most payments were suspended since March of 2020 when COVID forced closures and stay-at-home orders. President Biden has extended this pause 4 times already, most recently in April. Meanwhile, Democratic lawmakers are urging the president to broadly cancel up to $50,000 in student loan debt per borrower, but Biden has consistently pushed back on canceling that much. With the deadline looming, some type of announcement is expected this week. Stay tuned. Now, this isn't fishy or anything. The Moscow branch of the Russian Investigative Committee said that preliminary information indicated that the daughter of an influential Russian political theorist, Alexander Dugin, who's often referred to as Putin's brain, was killed by an explosive planted in the SUV that she was driving. Witnesses told Russian media that the SUV belonged to Dugin, and he had decided at the last minute to travel in a different vehicle. Well, if you thought we'd be hearing from Lindsey Graham this week, well, we're going to have to wait a little longer. A federal appeals court yesterday temporarily blocked a lower court order for the senator to testify before a Georgia special grand jury investigating the efforts by Trump to overturn his 2020 loss in Georgia. Graham's testimony was expected Tuesday. Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis says she wants to ask him about his request for state officials to re-examine absentee ballots and his statement to Georgia lawmakers about evidence of voter fraud, a claim that election officials debunked. While the appeals court sent the case back to the lower court to consider Graham's claim that he's shielded from having to testify because he's in Congress? Stay tuned. Meanwhile, the judge in the Trump Mar-a-Lago documents case says he still wants to release some of the affidavit underlying search warrant. But Judge Reinhardt also leaves open the possibility that he won't release anything. Mercy Wheeler at emptywheel.net notes that the judge seems to be thinking seriously about that option. One new reason he floated is that the affidavit includes details about Mar-a-Lago, a site which is protected by the Secret Service. The judge also noted that it has been 2 weeks since the FBI seized those classified documents, and neither Donald Trump nor his attorneys have filed one single legal motion about whether the affidavit should be made public. In other words, watch what he does instead of listening to what he says.
the man is a liar. And in case you're wondering if it was a fluke or not, Kansas on Sunday finished a recount that reaffirmed the landslide vote to uphold abortion rights in the state. Voters rejected the ballot measure seeking to strip abortion rights from the state constitution by a vote of 59% to 41. That's a margin of 165,000 votes. This was a partial recount held in 9 counties, and it changed the result by fewer than 60 votes. So there's that. And tomorrow, Tuesday, is primary day again. This time, all eyes on Florida, and New York, as they have their rescheduled congressional primaries too. In Florida, Democrats will choose a nominee to take on Governor Ron DeSantis. In New York, a number of tough congressional races pit incumbent against incumbent as new redistricting maps eliminated a few key districts. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.